Okay, it says now that this hangout on air is live.
That'd be a great start. Today's episode of the Daily Fantasy Basketball Podcast is brought to you by No Halftime. No Halftime is a DFS app that allows you to play in one-on-one fantasy contests. Use the promo code BBALL100, that's BBALL100, to get a deposit bonus worth up to $100. You can download the No Halftime app on the Apple Store or on Amazon.com. This episode is also brought to you by Draft, a daily fantasy app where your chances of winning are almost three times better than FanDuel or DraftKings. On Draft, it's draft day every day. You can do simple snake drafts for one day whenever you want. Drafts take just minutes to complete. Download Draft now. Be sure to enter the promo code DFBPOD when you download to get 100% deposit bonus. That's DFBPOD.
Cool.
And with that, Kyle, we're off. Hello.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just wanted to make it a little bit awkward. It wouldn't feel normal.
Should I start over?
If things weren't a little bit awkward, no, you shouldn't start over. I thought you did a wonderful job reading the promos, so I would clap, but I feel like it wouldn't necessarily sound good on podcast.
All right.
I'll snap my fingers for you.
Kyle, what's going on, man? This is our first podcast of the season.
During the regular season, you and I together, yeah, we did a little bit in the preseason, and that was good. But today we're going to be doing season long talk. I know most of the time that I have been on here during the regular season, it's been to just hammer through a bunch of DFS stuff.
Yeah. But here we are. We're both here together, and we actually have an announcement at this point.
That sounded optimistic, the way you said announcement. Like, hey, we're going to tell you about something cool that's going. But
some
no,
people might feel optimistic about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's optimistic from a certain perspective. Anyways, no, it's the first regular season show that Mark and I are doing together, but it's also, this feels annoying even saying it. It's going to be the last show that Mark and I do this season, most likely for the DFB pod. And the Daily Fantasy Basketball Podcast will be changing to DG's Courtroom, or Daniel will be changing it to something else. He's going to keep the feed. He's going to keep on pumping out the regular DFS shows that everybody's been listening to all season. I'm just not going to be on it, every a couple of days a week or here and there as I have been. And Mark's not really going to be on it. So that's where we're at. And mostly we just want to say thank you for listening. Like, so to Mark and I over the last several years, there's probably lots of Daniels fans who are listeners who are thinking, why are these guys even saying this stuff? Mark's only been on a couple times in the last couple weeks. Kyle hasn't been on in a couple weeks. But the Daily Fantasy Basketball Podcast started off as something that Mark and I were really excited about, a year and a half ago, and before that, doing the RotoWire podcast together. This is just kind of we're both pretty ardently walking away from the podcast game right now, or at least having our own personal podcast. I'm sure both of us are very open to showing up on other people's podcasts and even being a guest on Daniel's going down the road this season. But as far as having enough time in our lives after work and all that kind of stuff. And it's just gotten to a point where, I know personally there's just not enough time at night, because I still want to have the time to watch a lot of basketball and stuff like that.
Exactly. And, yeah. So for most of you that listen to Daniel's daily show, there will be, no change, right? Like, name might change a little bit. You get the same content pretty much every day. You won't have to skip my season long podcast weekly, and life will go on. But yeah, we did want to have one last podcast with Kyle and I, to mostly just so that we can publicly say thank you to everybody who listened to us for the last, I guess, what, 3 or 4 seasons?
Yeah.
Is that right? Whether it was at RotoWire or whether it was here. That was the funnest part, is hanging out with everybody who listened to the show and talking to them on Twitter or Reddit or whatever else. So it's been a lot of fun. And like Kyle said, there's just, you know, it might seem like, oh, you don't have an hour every week to do a show. That's not really it. But what it comes down to, and at least for me, Kyle, I don't know how you feel, but for me, where I'm not in the projections every day like I used to be, and where I'm not in the news like I used to be every day, I find myself this year, I'm not thrilled with the advice that I've been giving. And I never wanted to be one of those hacks. You know, one of the reasons I started doing podcasts with you is because I felt like there wasn't a lot of good fantasy basketball podcasts. Like, people just get on and they didn't really know what they were saying. And before I fully turned into one of those people, I thought it would probably be good for me to step aside and let folks like you or Daniel or whoever else lead people in the right direction.
You're a true knight.
That came off more chivalrous than I wanted it to, but it just takes a lot of work. I guess my point is, it takes a lot of work to be able to feel like,
right, to be
able to live up to the expectation that people are going to listen to you and change their team or pick up players or whatever based on your recommendations. And like, not to be too serious about it, but I kind of took that responsibility seriously, and I just don't feel like I have the level of expertise in that way anymore. And so there's no reason to come in here and try to fake that.
Right. No, I mean, I get exactly what you're saying. And I don't know if I really need to elaborate on it or anything. Let's talk about basketball, man.
Yeah. So come, you can still hang out. Like, Kyle's still going to be a basketball monster. I'm still going to be on Twitter or whatever, email me. But as far as the podcast goes, I think this will be the last daily fantasy basketball podcast officially. So to celebrate or to end or whatever, we're going to answer a bunch of questions we got from people on Twitter.
And, are we going to call this episode The Wake?
Yeah, sure.
Sorry, I interrupted you. You were saying about the questions that we're going to go over for the show.
Yeah, we got some questions from some of our listeners, which, so I tried to group these together. We got several questions. Some of them had very similar looks and feels. And so first one we got, Kyle, is from several of our listeners. They wanted basically to know us to talk a little bit about the unsustainable performances so far this season, with more of a like a who's outperforming and we need to sell high on, and who's underperforming and maybe we can buy low on. You have any names that you've researched that you'd like to talk about?
The first guy that kind of sticks out to me, when you go and you look through the per game ranking so far this season, you look at the 8 cat ranks and you're saying, okay, who at the top of the rankings doesn't fit? Like, who's not going to be there at the end of the year most likely? And this George Hill, I know he's been out, so you're saying, how can you sell high on a guy like that? But when you go and you look at his stats, or if there's rumors that he's going to be back soon, somebody might look at his stats and say, hey, I can trade this guy who's not as good as him, and I'm going to get him, and I can have him sit on my bench for a little bit or throw him into my IR spot. So if you have George Hill and he's been sitting on your roster all season and you're just waiting for him to come back, or maybe you've got two injured guys and he's, you know, one of them sitting on your bench and you want to get rid of somebody, or you're thinking about dropping a guy, consider trading George Hill. And the main impetus behind that is the fact that in the games that he has played so far this season, George Hill has averaged 20 points, 2.4 three-pointers. He's shooting 53% from the field. Those things are not those are not typical.
That's not the George Hill we know and love.
Right. He's going to average closer. I mean, maybe 18 points a game if you're lucky, but we've also, most of the time that we've seen George Hill this season, he's been playing on a depleted Utah Jazz roster. At the start of the year before he got injured, Gordon Hayward was out. And then we've also had Derek Favors out. And once this team gets fully healthy, I don't think we're going to see the same George Hill that we saw at the beginning of the season. He could still be more efficient than he's ever been before. He could still have a really nice season. I don't think he's going to be the 19th ranked player on a per game average when the season's all said and done.
That makes a lot of sense.
So that's one perspective. We could also talk about potentially DeMar DeRozan being a guy that you could look to sell high on. And the perspective there is all the points he's been scoring this season. And he's continued to score at a ridiculous rate even lately. So maybe it's not a sell high thing as much as I don't know if you really can say it. I don't know if it's worth selling high because this is this just legit? Is DeMar DeRozan is he just a 28-point per game scorer? And I think he probably is.
So you're believing in DeMar DeRozan?
I mean, I believe that he's going to take a billion shots a game.
A lot of free throws.
Right. I believe in everything he's done to an extent. I mean, mm-hmm. the last four games, he's shooting 60% from the field. I don't believe that. In the last seven games, he's shooting 51% from the field. Maybe. I mean, he is up to
a perplexing thing for me this season where he's shooting 49% from the field this season. And I don't think he's ever shot above. I mean, last year seemed like an anomaly. Last year, he shot 44% from the field. And I think before that, his career high was like 43%. So, but you're right. At some point, I mean, we're 30 games in the season. So at some point you kind of have to start believing it.
Well, and, you know, you think back to 2 years ago when he shot 41% from the field. He was dealing with injuries that year. So that kind of limited him. And he's 27. This is
the prime. This is, yeah.
He's in his prime. So maybe this is just what we're seeing from DeMar DeRozan. So, yeah, I mean, I believe that. Wouldn't necessarily sell high in it. But if you think that he's kind of playing above his head right now, maybe you could consider that. Lou Williams from the Lakers, I think, is an obvious sell high guy. That's not to say that Lou Williams isn't going to hold some value most likely, but I don't think he's going to be the 18-point scorer all season like we've seen so far, actually 19-point scores per game. And he's doing that in 25 minutes per game as well. Eventually, and we've already seen it a little bit, the Lakers are paring down their rotation, or they have in the last few games as they've gotten healthier over the last week or so. And I think Lou Williams is, even if he doesn't, like, 19 points a game is not real. The 22.5 points per game he's scored in the last eight games, that's not really what he is. You're going to see more of the usual 15 points per game, Lou Williams with, you know, 1.5 to 2 3-pointers. And he's going to have about or around 2 rebounds and around 2 assists and about a steal per game, which is serviceable. Absolutely. But if you can sell him to somebody as a guy who's close to being a 20-point per game scorer to capitalize and get a player who's going to have better long-term value, I would try to do that.
Mm-hmm. Hey, let me ask you about a guy that has been hard to pin down the last couple of years. Kevin Love, he went average draft position on ESPN before the season was 37th. So he was basically a third, fourth round pick. And he has been the 15th best player this season. He's averaging 22 points, 11 rebounds, 2.5 3-pointers, a steal, and a half a block. He's shooting 47% from the field and 86% from the free throw line. Do you think he's more likely to regress to that 37th best player overall, or do you think he's more likely a middle of the second round type player?
It's, you know, we have two seasons of him playing in Cleveland to look back on and to say, well, that's who he is.
Right.
But
he's that 16-10 guy who shoots a poor percentage.
Right.
Like that's basically, he was very consistently the same player the first two seasons in Cleveland. And this year, really the difference is those extra 6 points and that increased field goal percentage.
And aren't they just feeding him at the beginning of games? Like, didn't they make a point to do that? I know they were doing that early in the season, and I would guess that they've continued to do that. I'll admit that the Cavs aren't necessarily at the top of my watch list because they are who they are in most respects, yeah. Although this is a good in. Conversation about where they have evolved in certain respects.
They're giving him about 2.5 more shots per game, and he's getting a couple more free throws per game. So the optimistic part of me says he's been like dealing with injuries for the first couple of years in Cleveland, and it seems like he might finally be right. And this might be just like what uninjured Kevin Love is. Part of me also won't be surprised in 30 more games if he's back down to that 16-10. So I'm not quite sure what to do with this, but if I have to pick a side, I'm more leaning towards believing this is the new and improved Kevin Love.
Yeah, it just seems like they finally figured out how to mesh Kyrie and Love and LeBron James.
That took a little longer than we all expected, but you would expect them to continue to improve and figure that out more and more.
And then the 47% shooting from the field, Love's done that before. He did that back in 2010-11. He shot 46% from the field in 13-14. So this isn't uncharted territory for him. He shot 41% from three back in 10-11. So this is an uncharted territory there with him shooting 41% this season from three. Like, there's plenty of reasons to believe that this is real, but and I'm trying to think, like, if there's like, is there anybody missing from last year's team who would have been taking shots away from him?
No, and like I said, he's only getting like 2.5 more shots per game.
But he's also going to the line 2 more times.
Yeah, so he's basically in 3 more scoring opportunities per game, and he's converting them at a lot higher rate.
Yep.
You know, the numbers probably don't bear this out, but I kind of feel like LeBron has taken, and I want to go look up right now, somewhat of a like step back a little bit this. Let's see. No, he's taken the same number. No, last year he took not almost 19 shots a game. This year he's closer to 17. And his free throws are down. He's shooting one less free throw per game than he did his first year back in Cleveland. So that could be part of it.
I'm a believer for the most part. Yeah, like, there's nothing to say like this can't continue.
I'll almost be surprised that he's not averaging 15 rebounds a game in Cleveland. Like, I kind of expected when he went there to his points to go way down, but his rebounds to stay in the, you know, 13-14 range like they were in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. So that'll never make sense to me why he's at like 10 rebounds a game instead of like the 15 or whatever he was at in Minnesota. But I don't think we're getting that Kevin Love back.
Well, the one thing that people always talked about with Kevin Love in Minnesota is that he would or they would criticize him and make the argument that he would hunt for rebounds.
Yeah.
So, and I'm guessing on the Cavs that he's not really allowed to do that, because not only that, that's kind of Tristan Thompson's job.
Okay. Yeah, no, that makes sense.
You know, in certain respects. So, all right.
Any other players in this section you want to talk about?
Blake Griffin. He's 42nd. Ranked 8 cap player right now. I just think that he's an odd fit in a lot of respects for mm-hmm. fantasy basketball teams. And I also feel as though you could sell high on Blake Griffin based on his name.
Right.
Like, I think you could trade Blake Griffin and get a Kristaps Porzingis or a Mark Gasol or a Miles Turner potentially. Or a Rudy Gobert, you know, if you need more rebounds. So going that way, like, I think you could sell Blake Griffin in based on his name for a player who's just a better fantasy player. And maybe I'm being too harsh here because of the fact that Blake Griffin doesn't give you the typical big man stats. He doesn't really give you blocks. Right. He gets 0.6 per game. He doesn't give you a great field goal percentage. His free throw percentage isn't terrible in any regard, but it's still going to actually, you know, you're going to have to fight back up from it in certain respects for rotisserie. So when I look at what Blake Griffin does, I do like his rebounds are back up this season, actually 8.9. So that is nice. He averaged lower than that last year, right?
Yeah.
8.4. Not by much. You know, of course you appreciate the assists from him and whatnot, but like, it's just tough when you look at what Blake Griffin is and then you compare him to a guy like Brooke. I mean, okay, Brook Lopez is going out and at least getting three-pointers, you know, and he's adding three-pointers and blocks for you, even if he is only getting 5.4 rebounds a game. I just want more.
Yeah. No doubt. I got another guy that's kind of along the same lines, Kyle. Andrew Wiggins. Last year, he was the 88th best player, averaged 21 points a game. This year, he's averaging the same 20. He's actually up. He's averaging 22 points a game, but he's the 113th best player in the league, partially because he's only shooting 43% from the field. His free throw percentage is still 76%, and he doesn't give you many steals or blocks. And rebounds and assists are a little bit meager too. His three-point shooting is actually up this season. He's shooting 1.4 threes per game. I know I had some high hopes for Andrew Wiggins at certain parts of the last few years. And maybe this is actually a better question for a little bit later. But what do you think about Wiggins? He's definitely underperforming his draft position. I think he went in the top 50. I think a lot of people were excited about what he was going to do with Tom Thibodeau. And I guess I still have some optimism for him there, but so far it's been not great.
Okay. He's shooting just 43% from the field, but he's shooting 38% from the 3-point line. And he's shooting the same percentage that he shot from the free throw line last year. Yeah. He's getting, it's hard for me to find criticisms about it because
I'm so surprised the steals aren't higher. Like, he's really averaging a half a steal per game, which is really surprising for a guy who's a, you know, pretty athletic defender and a pretty solid defender.
I mean, I know we're a month and a half into the season, but still, like, it's a new coach. It's a new defensive system, and maybe he's just finding his way in it, and maybe Thibodeau is still just figuring out how to use Wiggins the best way in that system. Still just 21 years old until February 23rd. So,
wait, do you have all the players' birthdays memorized?
Yeah, I just really big birthday guy.
Oh man.
So, I have a hard time getting overly critical of a lot of these younger players, knowing that. For instance, I was a Zach LaVine hater, and now I am a Zach LaVine lover. I trust in Zach LaVine. If whatever he has become already, I don't know if there's going to be more coming forward, but.
I mean, in a lot of ways, he's had a much better season than Wiggins.
You know, the Timberwolves have the second worst record in the West right now. So I just feel like a lot of these issues that are perceived right now will iron themselves out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Wiggins had a hell of a second half last year. Like, he'll probably have another hell of a second half.
There you go. There's a good buy low guy. All right. Our next question, again, we got a couple of questions like this, but similar question, but a little different take on it. They're looking for head-to-head pickups, but and this one specifically came from Max McCarthy. He said head-to-head pickups, but looking at guys owned in less than 30% of leagues. And I have to say, I went ahead and sorted out all the players that are owned in more than 70% or more than 30%. Wait. Owned in or whose ownership is over 30%. And there wasn't a lot left. I feel like in past years, a lot of times when you start looking at those players, you still get a lot of quality players. So I guess that means that people are playing smarter this year. So what I had to do was I had to look at just specific categories and find players who were excelling at specific categories rather than finding somebody that I would recommend picking up. Because frankly, I couldn't find anybody that I thought was a surefire pickup. So if I started with points, there was actually nobody who was on the waiver wire, like who's owned in less than 30% of leagues that was good at points. And that's why, Kyle, we always recommend drafting your points. right?
Yeah. Yep. No, I mean, that's the big reason why you always talk about, you know, preseason wise, make sure you draft points early, make sure you draft assists early, because you can't get them during the season. They are unavailable.
Yep.
Unless an injury happens and, you know, the door opens up. But even when the door opens up, I mean, look who the door opens up for a lot of the time. Michael Conley's down. Oh, Andrew Harrison. Awesome. Yeah. Like, it's, you know, Tony Douglas is going to get signed and he's going to come in for 2 weeks and have one good game. Like, it's always make sure you draft your points and draft your assists, because otherwise you're probably going to get screwed.
Yep,
if you're, if you're building a team around those stats.
Right. That's the other way to go. Now, conversely, if we look at some of the other categories, like three pointers, Channing Frye is out there on the waiver wire in almost every league. He doesn't give you a ton of other stats, but if you're looking for three pointers, he is the 25th best player in the league for three pointers. So, you know, I don't think anybody in like the top 80 or 100 in points are available, but the 25th best 3-point shooter is available. That's Channing Frye. So that's a guy you might want to target. And again, that's why we always suggest like 3-pointers are probably not the most critical category to draft, because you can usually find somebody on the waiver wire.
Two other guys to consider, potentially Garrett Temple and Tim Hardaway right now, just because they're getting tons of minutes. Tim Hardaway's getting used for stretches as, like, you know, he's getting used as a ball handler, as like a backup point guard in some respects. If Malcolm Delaney was going to miss the game the other night, Tim Hardaway Jr. was going to essentially be the backup point guard. So it's, Tim Hardaway Jr. and Garrett Temple are two guys getting minutes right now that deserve a flyer or a look in a lot of leagues.
Yeah. As far as rebounds go, the two guys that I came up with are both injured right now, but they're guys that are coming back. Well, one sooner than the other, but Yam Nahimni is coming back supposedly in the next few days, as best as I can tell. He's a rebounding machine. Depending on what kind of minutes he gets in Washington, watch his return. And then Jared Solinger, I believe he's begun working out. I think he's still a month away, but all indications are he should have the starting job in Toronto. Don't know that that means he'll get starters minutes, but you may want to keep an eye on Solinger and pick him up as that time gets closer. Agree, disagree on either of those two, Kyle?
I think whenever Solinger gets back, I know there's been talks about anywhere from like the middle of January to the middle of February as far as when he might return, which, I'm sorry, when you start talking about a guy not coming back till the middle of February, I just started to think, so he might not play this year.
Right.
And I don't think that's necessarily the case with Solinger, but the Raptors have become more and more they're searching for something at power forward. Like the last three games, Siakam continues to start the game, but then Patrick Patterson has come in and started the third quarter each of the last three games. Just bizarre Dwayne Casey thing. With the Yan, so whenever Solinger's back, he's probably going to be starting at power forward. It's weird. Like, are they really holding the starting power forward spot for Jared Solinger all season? Is that what's going on right now? Because he wasn't even on the team last year. Right. He hasn't played for them yet.
I think they really like Patrick Patterson on the second unit. I think that's the only thing that is logical and makes any sense there.
And that's fine, because you know what? You look at a team like Minnesota right now, who everybody's kind of wondering, why aren't they winning more games? Why aren't they winning more games? Well, they don't have a freaking bench.
Yeah.
That might be the reason why.
Has always performed well, and they've been careful to make sure that they don't disrupt that unit, which I think, that makes a lot of sense.
As far as Mahinmi, what concerns me is that, you know, the way the Wizards have been running their rotations with guys like Kelly Oubre playing undersized power forward, Otto Porter getting undersized power forward minutes, Scott Brooks probably just isn't going to play Mahinmi minutes or decent more than, like, you know, 14 to 16 minutes unless Marcin Gortat gets hurt. So it's funny. They gave Mahinmi a lot of money.
I was going to say, I can't imagine they brought him in for a bit role like that and paid him $16 million a season.
Brooks said that. Like, when Mahinmi came back a couple weeks ago, there was the press conference before the game, Brooks said it. Like, that's just – it's. But Gortat's been good.
Yeah, he's been excellent this season, no question.
So, like, I mean, you can't blame him. And I think what we saw last season is, you know, it's the same thing that's happened time and time again. Sometimes when a team has money and they have to spend it on somebody and there's just
– And they're not particularly smart. Like, they don't totally know what they're doing.
Or maybe what we don't often understand as outsiders is the other perspective of how many people – there's a bomb. How many people – that was my coffee machine, which I ran water through for tea. Chai, if anybody was curious.
Excellent.
Yeah.
It'll be so, very relaxed for the second half of the podcast.
I've been pretty relaxed this whole thing so far. It's been wonderful, but so yeah, from all those perspectives, I don't think Mahinmi is going to get enough minutes unless Gortat gets injured.
All right, assists. Tony Parker, Jameer Nelson were the best guys I found. That's not saying a whole lot, but as Kyle said, assists are tough to find it in the middle of the season without an injury. Tim Hardaway, there you go. I don't expect him to pass the ball much, no matter what position he's playing.
But
even if he was playing on NBA Live with five versions of himself, I don't think he would pass it to himself. So
he's had at least two assists in the last six games, each of the last six games.
Yeah, but two assists is not what you're looking for.
I know, but he's had like three and four in several of those.
Jameer Nelson, I feel like Moutier could lose his job at some point, and they just bring in Jameer Nelson to help make sure the big guys get the ball. So as far as speculative ads, he might be the most intriguing to me, knowing that Moutier may there's a chance Moutier does keep his job and then Jameer Nelson's is not all that valuable.
I just don't know what the – like if you are the Nuggets and you're looking at your situation, how do you rationalize benching Moutier? Because if you move Moutier to the bench, he's not going to play because – Jamal Murray still needs to play. And, I mean, maybe Moutier develops better playing spot minutes against the bench.
I think that would be basically giving up on Moutier. Them saying, you know what, we need, like, this guy doesn't make baskets. He's not the point guard for us. And we've got two objectives now. We've got to try to make the playoffs because we're only, like, a game out. And we've got to develop our other young players. We've got to develop Nurkic. We've got to develop Jokic. And to do that, we've got to have a competent, if not spectacular, at least a competent NBA point guard. And Jameer Nelson probably qualifies for that.
You know, it's funny.
I think that's possible.
Jamal Murray's only shooting 40% from the field this season. But when Jamal Murray plays, he just feels like so much more of a threat than what Emmanuel Moutier does. Like, Jamal Murray will put the other team on. This defense on its heels. Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm not really big on Emmanuel Moutier for the rest of the season because he just keeps getting squeezed for minutes most games, and it's Moutier and Alfred Payton are just, oh man, it's so hard to be the point guard you should be in this league today if you don't have a jump shot.
If you can't make shots, exactly. Yeah. Even if you're good at literally everything else, it gets really challenging. Stills, there's nothing spectacular, but Thabo Sefolosha, he's actually been a top 100 player this season, almost entirely because of his steal rate. If you need stills for a couple of games, you might want to pick him up. And then in blocks, Kyle Quinn and Dwayne Dedmon, both not playing a lot of minutes, both not getting a ton of other stats, but they are high in blocks. They're guys you might want to think about picking up to enhance your block rate. All right, Kyle. Next question here is from Canucks. That's at Charlie Hughes 6. He says, who are some breakout candidates for the second half of this season? I know that you have one guy you kind of already talked about, which was
Levine. Yeah. Yeah. Zach LaVine is just kind of like I said earlier, I don't know if there's more to come this season necessarily, because what he's doing already is great. Or kind of more than what I think a lot of people expected. But I do believe that everything that LaVine has done so far is legit. He's just grown as a player. I think he's like
is he leading second league in minutes?
Is he? Yeah. Jeez, Ophi.
I mean, as long as that happens, he's going to be pretty valuable from a fantasy standpoint.
Right. He's getting the most minutes on the Timberwolves. I think a lot of people were under the or operating on the possibility that LaVine's defense wouldn't be good enough and that Thibodeau would end up kind of burying him behind Karl-Anthony Towns, behind Andrew Wiggins. And even if that may have been in some ways true to start the season, as far as LaVine getting a little bit buried behind the other two in the pecking order, LaVine hasn't waited to seize the opportunity that's been available to him. And just watch him play. He scores from all over the court. His jump shot looks really good. He's got great size. He's a good, I think he's an underrated passer at this point now. And honestly, the Timberwolves would probably be way better if they just started him at point guard and told Rubio to, you know, come off the bench.
Take a breath. All right. And I took a little different angle on this question. So what I did is I looked at rankings, basically per possession rankings. And I said, who's performing really well this year in the playing time that they're getting, that either because of injuries or whatnot, maybe don't have the value. In some ways, George Hill would have actually qualified for this category. But here's a few players I came up with. I want to run them past you. And if you think that they're going to have maybe a possibility of a breakout for the second half of the season. And again, my thinking here is basically like these guys have been performing well in their limited roles. Is there any chance they get more of a larger role? So the 18th best player per possession this season has been Jeremy Lin. He's obviously dealt with some injuries, but he's been solid when he's been on the court. Things are obviously kind of funky in Brooklyn. What do you think for Lin in the second half? And I really from here on out.
If you've held on to Lin, you're going to start getting rewarded soon. I know that the first couple games back, you know, he had the back spasms, but he was dealing with a hamstring issue, which I believe your hamstrings are tied to your back. A lot of the times if you're having back issues, it's because your hamstrings aren't healthy enough so it's not necessarily surprising that coming back from a hamstring injury, he had back spasms or back issues. Right. Now, he only played 22 minutes on Sunday, but he still put up 16 points, 2 3-pointers, 2 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals. Everything is going to be focused around Lin when he's healthy and when he's playing and leading this team. And he could get back close to his normal minutes, even in the next game for the Nets. That's everything I read this recently said that essentially they were taking their time with him a little bit here in the beginning, getting him back, but it's not going to take a long time for him to get back up to his full regular expected minutes, his expected role in the rotation. And he should be back in the starting lineup, I would guess, in their next game as well.
All right, next guy on my list. I know you're a big fan of, or at least you were preseason. I've actually talked to you about him this season so far. D'Angelo Russell, per possession, he's the 19th best player this season fantasy-wise. He's had to deal with Luke Walton's rotation. He's had to deal with an injury. What do you think about him from here on out?
He's averaging.
Think he can live up to that potential?
Yeah. Look, his field goal percentage sucks. It has sucked all season. But, again, he's played in 17 games under a new coach in a new system where he's he's still figuring, you know, he's still figuring stuff out, and he's also dealt with knee soreness at times this year when he has been playing. So his free throw percentage is up. He's hitting 2.4 threes in 26 minutes per game. So if he gets 32 minutes per game, who knows where that goes. There's a lot to like here. The fact that you're getting top 80 production in 8-cat leagues out of D'Angelo Russell per game right now this season in just 26 minutes, knowing that he could very well play a lot more minutes most games down the stretch this season, there's a lot to look forward to there. So definitely a buy low candidate. And the only thing you're really concerned about is the fact. So what was him sitting out on Saturday night? What was that about? Was it really knee soreness, or were they just saying, hey, look, you came back, you played in four games, we're going to give you a game of rest here. It's the second day of a back-to-back. Hopefully that's all it was, you know, just resting mm-hmm. him on the second day of a back-to-back. And that's where it will hopefully be.
Okay. Those were fairly easy ones, Kyle. I got a couple more controversial ones for you here. 32nd best player on a per possession basis this season has been Greg Monroe. Constant trade speculations around Greg Monroe. He's sat out entire games when he's been, this season so far with Jason Kidd as the coach. Is there any reason to be hopeful that Greg Monroe could turn into a, because certainly he would be available in most fantasy leagues. Is there any reason to believe that he could turn into a productive player for your fantasy team in the second half of the season?
If John Henson and Miles Plumlee's legs and arms all fell off, Greg Monroe would still be on the bench playing 21, 22 minutes a game. And they'd be starting Thonmaker, or they'd sign Robert Swift out of the Siberian Basketball League.
Wow.
And they would keep.
I did not expect to hear Robert Swift's name tonight.
It was one of my goals. So yeah, there's some good stuff about Greg Monroe. He averages a good number of assists for 2.7 assists from a center in 21 minutes a game. That's bananas. He's getting 1.1 steals in that time, 11 points. I'm reading what he did over his last seven games, not the whole season. So he's doing good. He's doing well in, you know, on a per minute basis. But unless the Bucks trade Greg Monroe, he's not getting a bigger role.
That might be the thing to take away from this is if the Bucks trade Greg Monroe and he's going to be in an interesting position. Like, even if there's a 25% chance that on his new team that he gets big minutes, you need to go pick him up immediately.
Okay, so if you're playing in a league right now that where Greg Monroe is already relevant, so if it's you got huge rosters, you got tons of teams in the league, and Greg Monroe is already rostered, somebody who provides 10 points, 7 rebounds, a little over 2 assists, and a steal a game or so, while giving you good percentages, you know, especially in those rotisserie leagues, if Greg Monroe's already rostered in your league and it's reasonable that he is, maybe go trade for him, because at least you know there's a boom potential there.
Yes.
If he gets traded to another team. So that way you're not, I'm not saying in your standard leagues where there's better players available for you to roster for your team. I'm not saying that you go out and have him stashed there. That's just, no, play the game. But in the deeper leagues, yeah, I think that's an interesting, he's an interesting guy to go after.
All right. I got one more guy for you. He hasn't really played enough minutes to take any stock into his rankings, but that's Caris LeVert in Brooklyn. And I think the only reason I want to bring him up is because that team obviously struggles for talent. You have to think that they're going to try to develop any semblance of young talent that they have. And LeVert would probably represent that as much as anybody on the roster. So I'm curious if you think that there's any chance he breaks out in the second half of the season and starts getting some playing time. Probably the reason I believe in him as a potential breakout even more than what he's shown us in the, I think he's played 72 minutes so far this season, is his college stats actually project pretty well, or translate pretty well to being a fantasy friendly player. So curious if you think he has opportunity to break out.
Yeah. I mean, you don't look at a lot of the guys on the Nets, whether it's Bojan Bogdanovic, Trevor Booker, really, even like, yeah. You don't look at a lot of those guys as, oh, that's a load bearing wall there. Or, you know, like,
good way to say it. They're not going to be on the next Nets playoff team.
Exactly. Yeah. They're not going to be starting on the damn thing. That's for sure.
Yeah. But there's a chance like Caris LeVert could, you know, if everything goes right in 5 years, he could be on the Nets playoff team.
Yeah, totally. And he's like, you know, our boy, Josh Red Rock B-Ball, he's the biggest Caris LeVert fan in the friggin' world. LeVert has a lot of things about him that are good. He's got good size. He can handle the ball. He's 6'7". He can play three positions. And anybody who's 6'7", I mean, apparently Kelly Oubre is like, how big is Oubre? Is he 6'7"? He's playing power forward. So, you know, like his versatility is going to be super interesting from Caris LeVert. And there's definitely, I mean, he should definitely be on people's watch list in your deeper leagues, for your standard leagues too, because if he does get the minutes, yeah, he could end up having a big role in the second half. I think, you know, just coming into the season, it's looking at him as a player, you're just kind of like ticking off a lot of different warts. He's coming in off of several foot surgeries. We don't know when he's going to return and play, but now he's back. And as soon as he was cleared to play and they got him through a couple practices, they started giving LeVert minutes in the rotation. And he's playing over Randy Foy right now, which, like, people want to criticize Kenny Atkinson. At least he's already, like, taking guys like Randy Foy out of the rotation, like, at first opportunity. And you got to respect that.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. All right, that kind of concludes a lot of the questions we got about just standard pickup drop type things. Most of the questions we have going forward are going to be player specific questions. Hopefully, they're still interesting, but we're going to jump into those and probably do them a little more rapid fire here. Connor Sullivan at Daily Dribble says, "How do you view Ben Simmons' rest of the season?" And then he asks a question I want to get to about dynasty leagues, but. First, Kyle, you're a little closer to the news than I am at this point. What do you think about Ben Simmons? Is there any chance we're going to get him back this season?
Yeah, he's supposed to return this season. It's just a matter of when does it happen. He's been showing up.
What do you think that looks like when he does return?
He's going to play limited minutes. What we don't know is Ben Simmons going to play limited minutes the same way that Aaron Gordon played limited minutes in his rookie season coming back from foot surgery? And is it, 'cause that was only like 18 minutes a game at most a lot of nights. And if that's the way it is, then will Ben Simmons have value for deeper leagues? Sure, but he's also potentially going to be on a Joel Embiid no back-to-backs restriction. Which, if he's on a no back-to-backs restriction, then that further, you know, deletes certain aspects of his value. So I guess I would just say, if you've got an empty IR spot and you want to stash Ben Simmons, cool, go ahead, see what happens. Because when he does play for head-to-head, he should be awesome. He should be really awesome. So you're not necessarily expecting buttloads of scoring right away, but you should get good rebounds. You should get really good assists potentially, you know, at least on a per-minute production. And then there's steals potential. There's blocks potential with him. Depending on how his jump shot comes along, I don't really think you're going to be seeing any three-pointers this season. Not much at all. But His percentages might even be good, so yeah. There's an amazing upside with Ben Simmons. It's just for 1 year leagues, you might be chasing a ghost.
Yeah, exactly. And then he asks, any tips for dynasty leagues at this point? Thanks. I would just say this with dynasty leagues, it's kind of to the point of the season where roughly what 30 games in, you've got to have a kind of a heart to heart with yourself and decide whether you think you can make a run at the championship this season. I'm not one that ever believes that you start a season with the theory that you're building for a different season. Like that seems like a dumb approach to me with fantasy leagues, but at some point you have to decide whether you have the horses to make a run out of this season. And if you do, hopefully you do. I think it's time to start sniffing around other teams that aren't in that position and trying to make a, you trade future value for current value trade. And obviously if you're in the opposite position, I think you ought to be doing the same thing, looking for a trading some of your good players now that aren't going to be helpful to you if you're not going to make the playoffs and trying to add some future value.
For salary cap leagues, for me, it's always been, if I'm going for it this year, I'm going to start looking at guys who have the players who are like the best players in the league, but they don't get kept because they cost so much.
Exactly.
So Kevin Durant got bought for $80 and he's not going to be kept. And that team sucks. They're at the bottom of the standings because they also drafted a bunch of guys who got injured or whatever early in the season. So they're starting to look at next year, and you've got
Ben Simmons or something.
Yeah, exactly.
And you don't want to part with him because he's going to be awesome for whatever years. But if you can win the championship and you can do it by adding Kevin Durant, you do it.
If you have a chance to win this year, you go for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's now the, so that's what you do in the salary cap leagues. And I guess that's exactly what you do in the leagues without auction, without salaries.
Yeah. I mean,
you try to flip those good young players for the much better, players who aren't going to necessarily be kept. So,
All right, let's get into our next question, Kyle. Mikey G. Vasquez says, who are your favorite second half season players? We've kind of already answered that question, but he specifically says, who's your favorite young keepers, first and second year players? Probably is kind of interesting to take a look and at the rookies this season and also the second year players. Obviously, Embiid has had, like, at least for me, unexpectedly such a wild season. I did not expect this. Like, on a per 36 minute basis, he's the eighth best player this season. He's totally defied my mantra, which is players who aren't going to play more than half the game and who are going to sit on back-to-backs are totally useless and you need to totally disregard them and not consider picking them up in standard leagues. He's produced enough value that is not even been accurate this season. So I think there's no question, at least in my mind, that he's, as far as rookies, he's, even if you throw Simmons in there, he's by far the best rookie now and going forward.
Joel Embiid's potential is so absurd in a lot of respects. Like, when you watch him play, you're just, to see the way that he can move at his size, the silky smoothness of his jump shot, to see what he's done in just 24 minutes per game so far this season, 18 points, 7.5 rebounds, 2 assists, 2.4 blocks, 2.4 blocks in 24 minutes.
Incredible.
1.3 three-pointers. He's shooting 47% from the field and 75% from the line right now. And he's only going to get better.
Yeah. If you're in a keeper league, there's probably only a couple of players. Even if we're limiting it right now to first and second year players. If you limit it to the entire league, there's only a few players you'd probably trade Embiid for.
Okay. So originally there was, how long is Joel Embiid going to stay on this? Let's start from the beginning of the season. Joel Embiid's not going to play on back-to-backs, and he's going to have a minutes restriction all season. Okay, well, Joel Embiid's going to start off playing, what was it, like 18 minutes a game this year? Then it was 20.
Yeah.
Then it was 22. Then it was 24. Now it's 28. But when he was 24 minutes, they said, that 24-minute restriction is probably going to stay until Christmas. It's not Christmas yet. And he's been on 28-minute restriction for a while. So if the 28-minute restriction keeps going well, his feet stay good, when is that going to get up to 32 minutes? Because if he's playing 32 minutes a night, get out of here, man. Get out of here.
It's over. Yep.
And then are they eventually going to remove the back-to-back restrictions? The only thing that gives me pause in like ardently suggesting that anybody and everybody try to trade for Joel Embiid is the idea that he might miss games in the playoffs for those back-to-back restrictions. And then...
Right, but if we're talking about a dynasty league, right, like there's not a lot of players that you would trade Joel Embiid for.
There's not a lot of players that you wouldn't trade for Joel Embiid?
I'm saying there's, if you have Joel Embiid, there's probably only a handful of players you would trade him
to. Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And like the foot issue stuff, you know what, man? How many guys now are we seeing? Yeah, they'll have complications from their foot injuries, but eventually it gets fixed and then they're fine.
And give Philly credit, man. They were patient and they took a lot of criticism, but they certainly didn't rush him back, and they allowed him to and helped him get healthy. And hopefully that will mean that he'll be healthy for a long, long time. Other than that, from a fantasy perspective, this rookie class has been not great.
Yeah, I mean, but we weren't expecting anything from this rookie class. No. What about Brandon Ingram? Haven't you been kind of intrigued by the fact that the Lakers have been like, hey, guess what, everybody? He's a point guard.
intrigued, yes. I've never been a super high fantasy-wise on Brandon Ingram, and he's done nothing but prove me right so far this season.
Whatever. Oh, my God. Hold on. You're saying that you still just don't – like, he had a 9-10-9 game last night. Granted, he played 40 minutes, but, like –
What do you like best, his 34% field goals percentage or his 7 points per game in 27 minutes per game?
How old is he?
Yeah, he's not old.
Exactly. He's
young enough to be one of your children, I think.
I'm pretty sure he's still 19.
He is 19, I think.
So, and he's 6'10 with like extra arm. He's got more arms than he's needs. And the fact that he's already averaging 27 minutes a game. I mean,
that's the only stat that I like of his, though.
But you also see the aspect that, like, he's playing a limited role off the bench, or they're pretty much just asking him to go out there and try not to screw things up. But then they're also at times saying, hey, we're going to put you in the backup point guard role, or we're going to start you at point guard. And it seems bizarre as heck, but then he goes out and he drops 9 dimes. So, yeah.
Listen, like, I realize the 9 assists are exciting to look at, but that's like, if you look at the box score from every one of his games, that's the only one singular box that has me excited. Any stat line, any game. I guess he had one game where he had 17 points. That's kind of exciting. I'm not seeing it yet. I wouldn't be really excited about trying to trade for him in any dynasty leagues. He's got a certainly, like, if you're trying to say, hey, there's the potential that he could even become, what, 75% of what Giannis is at this point. Like, I can see that potential, but there's a long road to get there, and there's a lot of diversions that turn him into a pretty average or below average player.
All right. I'm going to take the opinion that people that hate on Brandon Ingram are making premature. Whatever. He's going to be good. He's going to be great, but he'll,
I don't think it's out of the question, but
especially for head-to-head leagues, if you're punting field goal percentage, like that's where you're actually like keeping an eye on him this year. But I'm just intrigued too by the fact that he's already started like 8 games, and I know that that's been due to injuries, but when he started, he's played 39 minutes. And 39 minutes again, and 41 minutes, and that opportunity is, you got you got to be aware of that, because if he ends up getting into a role later this season where he's playing 38 minutes a night, like, and you're punting field goal percentage, he's going to be rosterable.
Yeah, we'll have to see. We'll have to have a podcast in 5 years and see what we think about Brandon Ingram by then.
How can he fail? How can a 6'10" dude with, you know, a 9-foot wingspan, how can he fail?
I mean, you're talking to a guy who has a Jonathan Bender jersey in his closet. So,
fair enough.
That brings back some hard memories.
I didn't realize you were like emotionally scarred. I didn't. That's where this.
Man, as a young Indiana Pacers fan, you hear the stories about how Jonathan Bender would shoot, be in like shooting contests with Reggie Miller and Larry Bird and beat them during practice, and then like he was in dunk contests and any sort of contest he was fine for, but games didn't work out so well.
Word.
All right. If we talk about second year players, that's obviously a lot more exciting. But I think pretty obvious too, right? Miles Turner's awesome. Nikola Jokic, as long as they figure out the minutes thing, is going to be awesome. Karl Anthony Towns is awesome. D'Angelo Russell, we've already talked about. Porzingis is awesome. Even players like Larry Nance, Devin Booker, Trey Lyles.
Devin Booker has 5 30-point games this season.
Yeah, those guys have been, you know, not elite fantasy players, but pretty good fantasy players. I don't know. There's a whole lot more to like in that rookie class. And that was true even last year when they were rookies. It's not like they've all gotten better this season, although they have all gotten better. It was just a better class of fantasy players.
I'll bring up one more rookie really quick. I don't want to drag this out too long. Marquese Chris, what do you think?
The first thing that comes to mind is Haralabob Bulgaris yesterday said the worst starter in the league is who, and they took a bunch of responses, but by the end it turned out he was talking about Marquese Chris. And probably a little unfair to talk about a rookie. I think he's another guy that just has a long ways to go. I think there are intriguing things, but from a fantasy perspective, I'm not thinking this year or next year is too much exciting is going to happen with him.
I'll agree. It's just the opportunity thing. It's like this cat's already starting. He's already been starting since like just a few weeks into the season.
Yeah. He started all but 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 games.
He's only 19. His last 3 games, he's averaged 29 minutes per game, putting up 11 points, 7 rebounds, 1.3 three-pointers, 1 block. Field goal percentage is going to be trash.
The hard thing for me is I'm not sure he's the best rookie power forward on their team. Like,
I don't disagree with you.
That's an awkward fit with him and Bender. I don't know how that's ever going to work out totally.
Well, I mean, but they've talked about doing stupid stuff like playing Bender at small forward. And maybe, I mean, realistically, I think that's their starting front court of the future is those two.
Yeah, but I wish I could hear them say it once. Do you know what I mean? Like, they always talk about other solutions. Like, oh, well, you know, they can share minutes at power forward, or we can play Bender at small forward. Like, just make me feel a little better about the situation. Yeah. Tell me that Bender's going to be the center and Chris is going to be the power forward, and I would feel a whole lot better about it.
Yeah, I agree with you. Or even just say, like, look, they're going to play in the front court, and it doesn't matter what positions they're going to play.
Exactly. Yep. Totally agree.
Yeah.
I guess my worry there is that I don't know that Phoenix totally has it all figured out, and that might stunt both of their growth a little bit.
I think Chris and Brandon Ingram are kind of similar-ish as far as their fantasy value for this season going forward, as far as being, like, they're both intriguing, and they're both guys you have on your watch list because – they could definitely walk into a just buttload of minutes later this season, but it's also possible they just continue to be in the similar role to what they're in right now, and that drags on.
If you were taking bets on rankings, I would take LeVert over both of them as far as rookies for just this season. Now, if we started talking about 5 years from now, I'd probably take them both over LeVert, but I'd rather take a gamble on LeVert if I had to just pick one of them up and hope that they were going to do well this season.
And the only reason I would say, like, disagree with that in a certain respect is because Brooklyn is what they are right now, and that's a team that plays essentially nobody more than 29 minutes a game, mm-hmm. and most of the time it's just a bunch of people playing somewhere between 18 and 27. So I would say that would limit LeVert's opportunity, even if he gets a bigger role throughout the year. Whereas with the Suns and the Lakers, we've seen indications that they're like more opportunity might be available.
And certainly with Ingram, right? He played over 40 minutes a game in one of the games this season. All right, let's get to a couple other questions. We're probably going longer already than we needed to go, so we'll try to wrap this up quickly. Joe Mattel says, is Will Barton good? I can't tell. He's probably teasing me about the fact that I would say I don't think Will Barton's a real NBA player, and obviously he's had a pretty good run. I still don't think he's a good NBA player. I'm not giving up on that stance. Kyle, you can take a more rational view on Will Barton. He's had two pretty great games the last two games with against the Knicks and the Blazers. He scored at least 15 points in both of them. He's hit at least 2 3-pointers. He's had 3 combined steals and 2 combined blocks. So, and what's kind of funny is that's after he moved out of the starting lineup. So maybe that's a better role for him. I don't know.
I mean, he's a good bench player. He's an adequate bench player.
But he is good at compiling fantasy stats. There's no question about that.
He's an aggressive player. So, like, as far as fantasy goes, you like that.
Absolutely.
But I would say this is somewhat difficult to say, but I would say 80% of the nights now, you're going to see Will Barton playing the 23 minutes, not the 31 minutes that he played in their last game. Because he's coming off the bench behind Gary Harris.
Right.
And Gary Harris is going to play at least 31, possibly up to 36 minutes a lot of nights. As long as Gallinari and Wilson Chandler are there. You know what? They've started Jokic next to Chandler, so maybe there is just enough minutes off the bench for them to go to Will Barton for a big role right now. Will Barton's a decent flyer because we don't know exactly what Malone's going to do.
Denver needs to figure out what they're trying to do here. They're one of the most confused teams in the league at this point, I think.
Yeah, I mean, there's a part of me that wants to say that, like, the odds are that Barton's going to play about the 23 minutes per game. But if they're starting Wilson Chandler, because if Chandler's not coming off the bench to press for those bench minutes against Will Barton, then that does open up more minutes for Barton there. So, I mean, I would guess it's not going to be over 30. You're probably going to see Barton kind of settle into somewhere between a 23 to 28 minute role most nights. Mm-hmm. And that's probably where you'll end up seeing his average fall if Denver continues to be healthy going forward.
All right, speaking of Gary Harris, Patrick at PJ Butter 1093 says, best long-term value picking two of these three, Josh Richardson, Gary Harris, or TJ Warren?
I think based on what we saw out of TJ Warren earlier this season, he's at the top of it for me. Yeah. What you're concerned about is what happened to TJ Warren? We don't really know. Did they say yet? I haven't seen anything. And that's like all I do is look at the news.
I was going to say, if you don't know, so, then nobody knows.
I was guessing that it was vertigo, that he had an inner ear infection and suffered vertigo, and essentially he just wasn't able to keep his balance for a long time. But in his return, he only played 14 minutes. So eventually you expect Warren to get back to playing the 32, 33 minutes per night that he was playing earlier this year. And on a lot of nights, it was more than that. He was playing 38, 39 minutes some nights. He was scoring close to 20 points per game. He's getting over two steals per game, essentially. He's scoring efficiently. There's a lot to like about what TJ Warren was earlier this season, so I would have him at the top of that. And then, honestly, I think Josh Richardson's got a more more all-around game than what Gary Harris has. So there's a part of me that would lean towards Josh Richardson, but as far as talent, but Gary Harris's role is his first game back. He played 31 minutes. It looks like he's going to be closer to a 16-point scorer this year than the 12-point scorer that he was last year. Hopefully he gets a little bit more three-pointers. But there might be modest bump in assists for Gary Harris this year. He might get three, might get four a game. If I had to pick two out of those right now, it'd be TJ Warren and Gary Harris. But I just want to continue to say, don't discount Josh Richardson because of the struggles he's had. Don't discount him completely because of the struggles he's had so far, because he was coming off an MCL injury. He didn't have preseason because of that. So everything he's been doing so far is kind of like getting back up to speed. And then he had an ankle injury that kept him out. So Josh Richardson is definitely one of those guys who, looking towards the second half of the season, you're probably going to look and be like, damn it, I had him on my team. So that's all. That's the way I look at Josh Richardson. Out of those three, keep TJ Warren and Gary Harris.
Next question is from Meta World Keist. He says, are Ricky Rubio's struggles a real concern now? Have him in a head-to-head team. Yes, Ricky Rubio, for probably a myriad of reasons, is not the same player that he's been in the past. I think we have enough sample size to say that it's not impossible that he could return to his same level of production, but it's certainly a concern, and it's certainly a possibility that he doesn't return to his same level of production of last year. But look, he's still averaging 6.5 assists and 1.5 steals per game. That's a tough combo to find on the waiver wire. My guess is if you drop him in your leagues, he will probably get picked up by somebody who's desperate for assists. So I think you just sort of have to recalibrate what you expect from Ricky Rubio this season and not expect to regain that level of value that you drafted him at.
I mean, I'm kind of the point that I hate him, but
I think everybody who drafted him hates him at this point.
Yeah, because even if you're like, even if I'm thinking to myself, okay, what leagues am I desperate for assists in? Well, it's that rotisserie league where, I get it. He doesn't take a ton of field goal attempts, so it doesn't hurt you as much, but it's still not good.
Not that great.
So, as far as evaluating what Rubio is now, I think he's the 6-assist guy. Could his steals go up? Sure. But he's averaging 6.6 assists in 31 minutes per game right now.
But there's nobody on the waiver wire who gets 6.6 assists or 5.5 assists.
Right. It's the fact that he's also averaging 0.6 three-pointers, 6.9 points per game, which is just...
That's not great.
Gag-inducing. There's not, when he was a quote unquote elite assist guy potentially and an elite steals guy, then yes, you get excited. Now, I think the steals being down, we were talking about Andrew Wiggins' steals being down earlier.
Yeah.
It could just be a symptom of the changes in the system with Thibodeau. He's probably just having him play back more or not go after steals, which if that's the directive from the coach, then. Yeah. Anyways, also, the ball is out of Rubio's hands more. And I honestly, they have the second worst record in the West. I don't know if I don't know if non-shooting point guards, like what teams are good that have non-shooting point guards right now?
Yeah, that's a great question. Back to our discussion we just had about Moody and Elfrid Payton.
Exactly. So right. I don't know if it's if they fit in today's NBA. So anyways, yeah.
All right, last question here is from at F Everything. Is that how that's pronounced, you think, Kyle? He says, Nurkic is breaking my heart. I think I can speak for you here too, Kyle. I think he's breaking your heart and my heart. But that's just the situation Denver's in. Nurkic is still a good player. He's great. If he ever gets a solid starting role, I think he'll be a fabulous fantasy player. Then he asks Patrick Beverley's rebounding rate, if it's likely to be sustainable this season. Now, the interesting thing is, if you look at his per 36 rebounding numbers, it's at six rebounds per game. In past seasons, he's averaged 4.4 per game, 4.9 per game, and 4.0 per game. So he's actually, you know, he's taken about a 50% jump in rebounding rate this season, which is great. I'm kind of at the point with D'Antoni in the way that he's such a unique coach that I tend to believe pretty quickly any change in stats that happens under D'Antoni, whether it be assists from the point guard or you know, 3-point shooting or what be it. So I'm inclined to believe that, yeah, Beverley can average, you know, he's at 6 rebounds per game. I wouldn't be surprised if he's over 5 a game this season.
Yeah, I wish I would have researched this question more. Because there's part of me that thinks, like, okay, you're Patrick Beverley, you're the undersized guard playing next to James Harden. Yeah, you kind of should be going after rebounds. Like, in, mm-hmm. you know, like, because you're not handling the ball.
And that might just be what D'Antoni's telling them to do.
But, you know, Beverley, man, if Harden gets hurt, that's where, like, Beverley is the most intriguing to me.
Right.
Is what would Beverley become under D'Antoni if Harden got hurt?
But, sorry, before we sign off here, I've got one piece of news that just came across the wire from the Vertical. Clippers forward Blake Griffin will undergo minor surgery on his right knee in the coming days. Expected return some point in January.
So the advice told you should have traded him.
Yeah, if you haven't traded him by now, you've missed your window.
Oh, no.
That's too bad.
I don't even know what to say. I don't even know what to say to that.
I just got another note from somebody else that say the Clippers play 14 of their next 19 games against teams below 500, so they probably will be able to weather that storm. And then we'll get a whole bunch of, hey, the Clippers look better without Blake Griffin than they did with Blake Griffin. They should probably trade him.
So DeAndre Jordan, though, he went off last year.
Yeah.
With Griffin out. So congratulations to all DeAndre Jordan owners. You should potentially see a rise in rebounds and maybe even some more lobs to him.
Scoring, yeah. So, yeah, if you want to maybe look at trading for him, that's probably, I mean, Chris Paul probably gets a little more of the ball handling duty, so he may get another assist or something. But I would say outside of DeAndre Jordan, I don't think there's anybody who really stands to benefit too much.
Yeah, who did they start last year while Griffin was out? Was it like most? No, the they Paul's, didn't have.
Yeah, Paul Pierce.
Oh, I wonder if they'll even think about shifting Luke Richard up.
Yeah, they might.
So does Maurice Spates?
I don't think he can be a starter.
I don't think so either. do they break Brandon Bass out of the mothballs?
Yeah, that might. I wouldn't be surprised about that, actually, even if they don't play him big minutes if he starts. He's one of Doc's guys, you know.
Well, I wonder if they do just shift Luke Richard up and potentially just play Austin Rivers at small forward.
Yeah.
Which one have you watched Austin Rivers at all this year?
Yeah.
I don't like him.
Well, It's not really different than past years, is it?
No, it isn't. And that's just it. Like, you know, even when you watch like his highlights this year and he's hitting all his shots, I'm still like, you still got to.
Isn't there some Chinese proverb about getting bit by a snake over and over? And like at some point, it's not the snake's fault. It's, you know, is that applicable at all here?
I guess my reflection is just that a lot of the times I will, you know, when you have a certain perspective on a player and you want to like double check yourself to say, okay, sometimes guys evolve or they change or whatnot. You know, like we've seen how great of a player Jay Crowder's developed into, things like that, the way that Avery Bradley has changed over the years. And so I tried to look at Austin Rivers today from a fresh perspective, and I still just, even when he's like making shots, I'm like, I just hate you. Like, you look like you're angry at the fact that you play basketball for a living, and it makes me angry. Yeah. So, yeah, I guess that's all I got to say on that.
All right, Kyle, I think that about wraps it up for us. Thanks to everyone for listening. Thanks to everyone who's listened for a long time. Thanks to our sponsors. Shout out to No Halftime, who sponsored the Daily Fantasy Basketball Podcast pretty much from the beginning. And thanks to everybody who chipped in at the beginning of the Daily Fantasy Basketball Podcast.
Absolutely. Yeah, that
helped us make the logo and make the website and everything else. Sorry, Kyle, I cut you off like 3 times.
No, you said all the things, and I just, yeah, you're correct on all those.
Yeah, we had a good time. Thanks again, everybody.
Mark, everybody can still chat with you on the Twitter about stuff, right?
That's right.
Yeah,
at Mark F. Roberts.
And not that again. I don't know. I always have aspirations to actually be more like chatty on Twitter. Maybe I'll actually start talking to people while I watch basketball games on Twitter. Maybe that's what I'll do instead of worried about writing stuff down or whatever, taking notes. Now I'll just start tweeting at people and stupid stuff. So, all right, everybody, we love you. Have a good day.
Peace out.
And I guess we'll catch you on the flip side.